Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Sometimes fear is a friendly reminder you're not ready for something.
No. Fear is fear. It doesn't speak in riddles. Fear means you're smart. You understand the risks.
So what are you afraid of?
I don't know where I would begin.
And you found a way to live with it?
I found that even in the darkest circumstances, there is a light, sometimes only a glimmer. Trust that light. Find a way back, no matter what it takes.
Your mother was very lucky to have you.
Star Trek Picard, episode 6 of season 2 of 1.
So we get started then?
I think we shall.
Okay. The It's Got Star Trek podcast, episode 126, in which we are discussing season 2 of Star Trek Picard, 2 of 1.
It's a very short episode.
Yes, we'll get to that, okay. First of all. I think the first thing we should address is, what is your opinion on Jurati's singing performance?
Oh my gosh.
I was like,
oh boy.
First I was like, this is, I don't know, but it was actually kind of funny once I sort of got into it.
For me, it was similar in that the...
if you think about like what's sort of going on with Jurati, it's sort of more funny.
The singing was good. The whole idea was funny. Where it fell apart for me was, I was like, what's going on here? This is ludicrous. Why are they putting a spotlight on her?
Yeah.
And why is the band playing? I'm willing to suspend disbelief.
Well, the band,
to a great degree.
Bands in every movie and TV show either know every song, or they can immediately learn it. They learn it by going like, well, what's the key C? And you know, there is a little bit of truth to that.
Yeah.
But I think
jazz musicians are supposed to just sort of know every song.
But they're just supposed to start singing when some lady starts singing up on the,
I think,
on the bench after the power went out.
I think if you're already the entertainment and like all of a sudden the power's out and like if somebody wants to, you know, just spontaneously do whatever, like the band is there waiting and they're like, well, we know that song, we'll play it.
I think you're being wonderfully generous
here. They should have at least shown a scene of her tipping.
That's what the band is supposed to do.
They should have at least shown a scene of her tipping like the leader and been like, hey, can you play this for me? Yeah, we can do that for you. No, they didn't need to. That would have been a waste of time, really.
There was a thing that marred this episode slightly for me, because I really enjoyed the episode otherwise, the whole caper aspect of it and everything.
It was silly, but I was fine with it.
It was more, was it more or less silly, though, than in Discovery when Burnham and Saru go yarg at each other, like, in that episode, when they start yarging at each other?
It was much sillier.
You think it was sillier?
I think it was.
That was great. Yeah,
what I mean by silly, I should define that in more detail.
Because it was actually more, it's arguable that it was more relevant to the plot, though, than Burnham and Saru's yarg. Because that actually...
Yeah.
It's always sillier when somebody fucking breaks into song.
Right. Okay. But there was a purpose for it
for me, and I know this is a nitpick.
I mean, they could have done anything, but they just chose to go in that direction.
It just didn't make any sense narratively. The plot-wise, yes.
That's true.
Yeah. Jurati distracting the guards and other people in order to allow Picard to go complete the mission, totally cool with that. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. The Borg Queen using some sort of EMP device or something to disable the power temporarily. Okay, no problem. I'm right with you there. I'm suspending my disbelief that this is a new power that the Borg Queen has. Or this version of the Borg Queen who's half infected Jurati's body. It was when the spotlight came on where I was like, wait a second. So
yeah,
the spotlight guy is like, oh, you know what? There's a lady singing down there. She's wearing a low-cut red dress.
It's a red dress. That was his clue, is that she was wearing a red dress.
I guess I'm supposed to shine the spotlight on her, even though we didn't go through this in rehearsal.
Right. Yeah.
And we weren't really set up for a spotlight, necessarily, given the context of the party.
Well, those spotlight people are just as on point as those musicians,
but
right?
But you gotta, rent the spotlight and install it. Like, I don't see why they would need a spotlight in this context.
It's like they own their own spotlight. That's like, you know, how a drummer owns their own drummers. The spotlight dude owns his own spotlight and brings it to every party he works at.
Oh, okay.
But now, did they hire a spotlight guy? That's the question.
Again.
They should have hired a spotlight
guy. It's not that you cannot construct some form of obtuse and convoluted justification and explanation. Absolutely you can. And that's what we do all the time in Star Trek when we're developing our headcanon.
I'm with you on this.
Certain times it goes a little bit beyond.
Yeah, I agree.
So for an example, in the much maligned Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, there is a scene where Uhura does a dance, singing a song atop a desert dune for the purposes of helping out her compatriots. Now, some people may like this scene, some people may not like this scene, but regardless, it works within the context of the plot, right? It can be a silly concept, but it's just somebody getting up on a dune and singing a song, waving some leaves around, trying to pretend to be all sultry and sexy. In this case, I just couldn't get over the band taking up, just figuring out, okay, all right, I guess we're going to do this in the key of F or whatever.
Right.
And the spotlight and the mood lighting coming back on. So I don't know if the Borg Queen has hacked into the system and is mentally controlling
Not enough information for us. We can headcanon that.
The result.
That's a good band. That's
the result
how bands
is good.
Work. They're like, we can figure out how this goes.
I just love this idea. I love Jesse's defense of the journeyman jazz bandist who just know how to go with the flow, and I respect that.
Because I think that's a song by somebody.
It's Pat Benatar
from the 80s or something, Pat Benatar. Right? So by this 2024 business, like, that's already a tune that
there were a lot of
they would know.
That was more like a big band type situation, though. It wasn't really a small jazz band. There was a lot of people. Like, if you have a small trio of dudes, yeah, you can probably work out something. It's like, okay, the C and then E and then G. And
this was equivalent to a musical, which, note to the audience, I'm a huge fan of musicals, but in the context of musicals and the consistent, constrained fantasy reality of musicals, you accept that everyone knows how to dance and the choreography and the music.
And now it doesn't fit at all with Girardi's character or BQ's character, but you could say that, well, that was representative of, you've got this reserved, lonely, shy Girardi who has this sense of humor, and so this is the Borg Queen making her sort of like
stand
up. And
I'm cool with that.
And that's what you can sort of gather from it, obviously. But you're right. It doesn't really, though, the puzzle pieces don't quite fit right.
Let's think about it this way.
It just doesn't follow the way.
It was very unexpected.
It's not the way they would do it. It doesn't seem like it's the way they would implement that kind of
vibe. Let's keep the scenario identical to how it played out on the screen, with the minor change that instead of how we saw it, it was just Girardi going up to the stage with the musicians and being like, hey, grabs a mic and starts singing. Mm-hmm. And then the musicians are like, I don't know. And then they start playing. That's still a distraction. That's still Girardi showing a different side to herself with this new slowly combining possibly personality between her and the Borg Queen. But it is not a ludicrous proposition for the audience to expect this is the fucking spotlight.
I agree.
Because the spotlight wasn't even pointed at the stage. It was pointed opposite from the stage, which doesn't make any sense.
You're right. It was presented as if...
Where was the spotlight?
It was
the spotlight must have been like above the stage in order to point at the stairway.
Because that was like
entrance.
Some kind of like... balcony jam.
Yeah,
you're right.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You're right. It did sort of like have the style of a musical, but the thing with the musicals, there's already that conceit that, like,
precisely,
this is what we do during musicals.
Precisely.
This is how it works. You know, it's not throwing...
Like, if you're watching The Music Man, or Oklahoma, or Seven Brides for Seven Sisters.
I think Guys and Dolls is the one I've seen the most. For some
Guys
reason,
and Dolls.
And that's not even on purpose.
Rent
for
with
some
Anthony
reason,
Rapp.
For some reason, Guys and Dolls is... I've seen it so many times, and I haven't even tried to see it. It's just my family is always... Someone's in a performance, or
that's
something
quite
happens.
A family,
and,
man.
See, it's always
the
Guys
sound
and Dolls
of music.
Everywhere.
The sound
have,
of music.
Quite a family.
There's something.
Yeah, Chicago.
Sit in the car won't go. Chicago.
Anyway, it's again,
that's not how it
it's a minor mar on this episode.
Slightly different.
I mean, that's not in the show.
But there's some kind of saying that.
You're talking about from the show, Chicago?
That's the saying, but that's not from the show.
You're talking about sit in the car won't go.
I don't think that's from the show.
You got a shit car go or something? Chicago?
Chicago. You're talking about the escargot joke with the snail?
No, I'm going to find it.
Look at that escargot. All right. You do the search for that. We'll move on to the next situation. I don't want to say issue because it's not really, I guess it's not technically an issue with this episode, which again, I enjoyed. I liked this episode, the parts that were there, because this episode was only 38 minutes and 50 seconds long with the credits, right? So
it was like slightly longer than an episode of Seinfeld.
I'm wondering if this may be the shortest duration episode, like full season regular episode, non-short Trek.
Last week was about...
What about the animated
series? Not Lower Decks, not animated series. If you recall,
last week when I was talking about the trilogy, and I was saying that episodes are like 40 minutes, you were like, no, they're like 3 hours long a piece. And I was like, no, they're not quite that long. Okay,
well,
but I
didn't say 3 hours.
This one was, last week was like 41 or 42 minutes. This one was even shorter.
If you look, it keeps getting shorter by the episode.
I have the numbers before me.
Yeah. Oh, but while you look those numbers up, notes. I want to tell you, this is not what I remember the saying to be, but this is one of the sayings, I guess. It's
the Chicago saying.
Chicken in the car and the car can't go. That's how you spell Chicago.
Oh, so it's a turn of phrase to help remember how to spell the word Chicago.
But I thought
chicken?
Yeah.
Chicago's a pretty easy word to spell. How about
how smell you say?
how about Minneapolis?
I thought it had to do with shit cargo, like
Mississippi.
Shit. I thought it's like the car didn't go, so you say shit car go.
I'm unfamiliar with this aphorism.
But I found another one. It says chicken in the car and the car can't go. That's how you spell Chicago. So it's here too.
See, the first
part sounds like it's
some sort of a clever little ditty. You know,
chicken's on the
chicken
train.
In the car and the car won't go.
Chicken train.
That's how you spell Chicago.
Okay. So the run times for this season, which I do agree, Dan, I was thinking about this when I was reviewing this. I do agree this contributed to our minor altercation last week.
Only a small part, though. Well, there were other issues, too.
All right. For this specific situation.
I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming you. I'm saying that existed in the objective space of the sort of ambiance between the three of us. No one person's fault. It's just us morphing together to create a single consciousness.
Okay. So, I do think this contributed because last week you had indicated, you said, yeah, each episode's like 45 minutes long or something along those lines. And I was like, well, actually, that's not true.
I don't think they had one that was 45 minutes.
The first episode of the season was 55 minutes and 32 seconds long.
Yeah. Well, fuck.
The second episode was 54 minutes, 20 seconds.
They keep shaving off the minutes. Like it's like when you they slowly take your, it's like burning, like a frog boiling in a pot, right? You know, slowly happening.
A frog?
You know how the frog boils in the pot?
Dude, what are you eating?
And that's like an aphorism I'm familiar with.
Yeah, where the water starts cold, but it slowly gets hotter, and suddenly, so it's okay, but suddenly...
Although apparently in real life, when you do that, the frogs just jump out once it gets too hot.
I imagine.
The third episode was 47 minutes, 19 seconds, so that's like almost 7 minutes shorter than the previous episode. Mm-hmm. The fourth episode was 47:44. Last week's episode falls yet further down to 43:38, so...
Now who's the numbers guy?
Yes. I'm playing the role of Dan this week. Because last week you were basing your estimation on the season off of that particular episode's runtime. Mm. And where I was thrown off was because I do know that previously many Picard episodes were quite a bit longer, so my average in my head was higher. But
that's fair enough.
But the fact is as the season is going, if it continues the pattern, because this week's episode was 38 minutes and 50 seconds, if it keeps losing 5 minutes per episode, the finale is going to be like 15 minutes long.
It's going to be the length
your average
of like a
is going to hold out.
It's going to be like a Lower Decks episode.
It's going to be like a He-Man.
They're just going to do a crossover with Lower Decks on the last episode.
I do, though, want to... I'm now feeling itchy about looking up all the runtimes for all Star Trek episodes ever and doing a statistical analysis to see like what the various...
I bet because of television, they're all... Well, I know TOS was like 50-plus minutes, and then TNG was more in the 40s.
Yeah, TOS was, I believe, 52, 53 minutes, and then for a while, TNG and all that was around 47 minutes, mm-hmm. but I think by the time of like Enterprise, it got down to like 43, 44 minutes. minutes per hour. Yeah,
yeah. I bet they shaved him off.
Voyager was like 45, something like that.
Because they used to be, they used to be an down to the exact second, and it's probably when
on streaming they now are variable.
They're variable all the time, and when streaming started to go away, or streaming started to arrive, and regular TV started losing power, then they also they just added more commercials to everything. Yes. So that was a little different too. But when TV was in its heyday, I think it was like in the 90s, 80s, and 90s.
I was going to ask you when do you think the TV was in its heyday?
Probably 80s and 90s.
Would you call that the golden age, the silver age, the platinum age?
I don't know. There was a lot of boring ass golf on Sundays and shit like that.
I think they still show golf.
Golf is more exciting. I hate to be one of those
Not all of us find it that
boring. No, I don't. Yeah, I respect.
This guy watches golf.
I respect that. But I find it more entertaining. I don't watch golf, but I find it more entertaining now because of all like the production and graphics. And I know that's such a poser thing to say, but like...
I'm digging the production and graphics.
Just because the old golf just seemed like some... It was always just bad video quality and just... People walking around.
We're like watching some black and white golf.
And it's like, hey, I hit the ball and it goes to the sky and you don't see shit. And like, I'm sure if you know golf.
So you like the little digital
camera goes up and it goes down. That,
yeah, yeah. I like all the, it makes it feel like a video game with the digital lines and
that's fun. Golf.
And the colors are so much better now. You can really enjoy that putting green, you know?
Golf is similar to Star Trek in that you can enjoy it better if you've experienced it in real life.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. If you've actually like done TNG, it.
Right. If we have been on the bridge
with
Worf.
If you've been on a spaceship and encountered aliens and had to have various sort of diplomatic, philosophical, and political battles.
Like, what do you do if you have a computer virus that can eliminate all of the Borg? If you're Jean-Luc Picard, do you use it to end the Borg, or do you not do it because it's genocide?
So for the peculiar listener who is just joining the podcast in the middle of
you
a season,
fucking weirdo, get the fuck out.
We will mention that Dan has a particular obsession this season that the iBorg. Episode of TNG is going to be referenced relating to Picard wanting to use a computer virus to genocide the Borg.
That's a major plot point in why the world didn't turn out to be the people that it was.
Dan's hypothesis is that this is somehow the plot of the season. It may hinge on this fact.
It may yet. If Picard had genocided the Borg with that virus, then we would have. That's when we would have lived in that episode two evil times with where Picard was this sort of monster dude, and everyone was a monster dude, and trying to like kill all the other races. That's what would have happened if we genocided the Borg with that computer virus, because it would have sent us down this slippery slope path of like we can eliminate anyone however we want to.
What kind of path?
Slippery slope, but it's probably not. It's probably not going to be that way.
Probably not.
But I've been waiting to know what happens. What would have happened if they did? I get it was a moral question. It's the question.
Okay,
but
I propose when there's not new Star Trek on.
Okay.
And when we can get back to doing some episodes from the other series. We should just talk about iBorg, and then you can talk an entire podcast episode about
it. I think I pretty much already said it.
I know, but it'll be a good cathartic opportunity for you to get it all out of your system.
You're right.
Okay. So
the title of the episode.
Oh, now you're now the oh,
wait.
Title.
Now wait, were you finished? Were you still saying something?
No, I was just wrapping up and segueing to the title of the episode.
Two of one. Not? Sounds like seven of nine.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, clearly.
And it's about Jurati.
It's
and
almost B- worth. It's almost not worth mentioning.
Right, but it segues into Jurati and BQ's sort of relationship.
Well, because it's the reverse of what we usually have, because it's usually a smaller number of a larger number, because the smaller number represents the unit you are within
the
larger
the
group.
Right.
In this case, it's two of one. The larger number going into the smaller number.
It's a zoop-de-zooper is what they
it's
call
a
it.
Total twist.
And so Jurati was...
A zoop-de-zooper.
Zoop-de-zooper. Jurati once again found herself in the position to be talking to herself, except last episode where she was talking to Picard and company, she was now talking to the Borg Queen, who was in her head. So... From the outside perspective, this woman is like just talking to herself the whole night. I mean, even the security people commented on it with Picard, and now she's still doing it. And I think
they're still looking at her the whole time.
Yeah, I think at one point in the episode, someone's like, you know, they've been... I think she was like, people have been looking at me funny all night or something. I don't remember, but there was a line like that. And I was like, it's because you've been fucking talking to yourself all night long, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
And Alison Pill's doing a really good job of...
Yeah.
Fantastic job of... slowly changing her personality kind of be dealing with this Borg queen and responding in ways like, you know, saying like, I, you know, that sort of thing. Subtle, but I thought very well portrayed.
Yeah, I agree.
She's having fun with it.
And she seems more, even though her voice isn't like Jurati, she's not imitating people's voices, but her mannerisms are more like Jurati this episode in a lot of ways. Of course, there is this weird sort of computery, her computer voice, her computer Borg voice comes through every once in a while, you notice. It kind of like, she'll be talking in a normal voice, and then all of a sudden it'll go like, robot, robot, and then like it'll fade out, like almost like you didn't hear it or something, but it happened. It happened.
It did.
And so she's, but I know I like that she's sort of, her character has been kind of changing, and she's acting like, makes me feel like she's some sassy Jurati.
It's also an interesting
Sasserati.
It's
Sasserati. Vinny Sasserati.
It's an interesting added complication to their whole mission, right? Where they have two major complications. One is Adam Soong is inserting himself into the situation. We'll talk more about that in a second. But Jurati having to deal with her own issues, in this case, the issue being first having the Borg Queen just sort of hanging out in her brain, and then by the end of the episode, taking over her brain and apparently wandering off into downtown Los Angeles to do who knows what. I know that they're in downtown Los Angeles. I recognize it because I played a lot of GTA San Andreas.
That's how you know.
So I was like, oh yeah, I know where she can parachute off the top of that skyscraper right there. That would be a good one to parachute.
And apparently, yeah, the Borg Queen was able to take over because of those endorphins. She finally got all the endorphins she needed to take over.
Yeah. So I will say another little nitpick I had that I might be just misunderstanding, but I was confused by it. At the end of last episode, we see the Borg Queen sort of inserting herself into, for lack of a better term, into Jurati. And at the time, it seemed like it was against Jurati's will. That's the impression I got, that the Borg Queen sort of tricked her and Jurati got too close and the Borg Queen tricked her and inserted herself within Jurati. However, now it seems clear, or at least Jurati basically states outright, oh, I didn't want to lose you because you have to, you know how to do the time travel math calculations, but I couldn't let you kill the cop, so I shot your body with, and the implication was that she knew that the Borg Queen would download into her or something. I found that to be...
Yeah, right. They made that clear.
Teensy little bit of a stretch. And confusing too, the way they portrayed it, the last scene of the previous episode going into this scene, it's one of the first scenes and we're like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah, I agree. It was, I can't remember the exact scene, but I do remember thinking that explanation was a little bit unclear to me at first, and then I was like, okay, I get what they're saying, and it felt like they were just kind of making it clear for the audience, like, her motivations, but as you said, it was like, they told you more than showed you about it, I guess, is what you could say.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, let's delve into this Adam Soong character.
Oh, no.
We'll be right back. All right, we're back.
No, we're not.
We are back on the podcast. Adam Soong. We discussed him a bit last week, of course.
That guy sucks.
Well, yeah. So last week, I think we were willing to be a little bit more sympathetic towards him because that's somewhat how he was portrayed. Guy sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place. He wanted to save his quote-unquote daughter, and Q was messing around with him, sort of essentially blackmailing him, leveraging the illness of his daughter and a potential cure in order to get Adam Soong to do what he wanted. And I think most people can appreciate not wanting to be manipulated, particularly when it comes to the health of a loved one. So I thought that was smart. They did a really good job of setting that up. And then in this episode, they have him fucking run down Captain Picard. Yeah. And we find out he's just cloned a bunch of dying babies. Yeah, I know. Over and fucking over and over. Oh my God.
So there was what were the babies? There was Persephone, who died after 1 month. Desboina after 3 years. Then Persephapata,
which is a different form of Persephone.
Yeah, it was a liver failure. There was Artemis, who, and then he said something about he let the frustration get the better of him.
Greek and Roman gods.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he meant when he said it showed him broken, being like, I'm only doing this one more time. And he's like, frustration got the better of me. And I was like, what does that mean? Does that mean you killed one of them? Or like,
I'm very curious. Yeah. And I'm presuming we will find out more about that, because I think it did what good writing does, which is it gets your mind racing to think like, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah.
Did he kill one of his children?
Yeah.
Or did he destroy a whole bunch of clone embryos or something, and now he's only got one left? Did he yell at somebody at some important company or some important politician or something is going to get him in trouble somehow? I'm not 100% clear.
How does this guy relate to the Soong in first season of Picard?
Okay, so the Soong, that's Alton Soong, who is the son.
Right, I'm trying to keep track.
The son of Noonien Soong. He was basically the Soong brother.
Bloodline.
He was pretty much the brother of Lore Before and Data, and he was also a scientist.
Lore Before Data.
Yes, Lore Before Data.
Right, now it's funny.
So that's Alton Soong. Now, one idea people have had on the internet now.
Oh no! Did he time travel too, or does he live forever?
No, not time travel.
Did he clone himself and live forever?
Some people are just suggesting that all the Soongs are just clones. Like that's what they've been doing for a long time.
That'd be some fucked up shit.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think I liked. I don't know if it was because of how they wrote Adam Soong, or if it was because of Brent Spiner's choices, but he seemed a little bit more like a normal, sane person. And less of like this crazy mad scientist. Of course, that is until the very end. But the way he portrayed his character, he just seemed like a guy.
Now, are you talking about Adam or Alton?
The one whose father, in this season. Because he seemed like just a guy who was really stressed about his daughter.
Exactly.
And that's how he was portrayed. Now, it turns out, we find out he's fucking nuts. But the way the character was presented, it didn't seem like this sort of like this overbearing kind of Soong character that's like, I'm a flaw. You know, he was more just like a dude.
Like, you could have a beer with this guy.
Yeah, you could have a beer with
this guy.
I wish he was my president.
I don't disagree with you. I think this was a clever thing to do, which was to, again, have us readily sympathize with him in the last episode, even if he is abrasive and aggressive in a lot of ways, and we see some of those personality
but
traits.
But that's just more like a thorny personality and not the sort of flamboyant.
Sort of almost typical super genius kind of guy.
It's not this flamboyant, crazy motherfucker.
Being constrained by the rules, you know, it's something that probably a lot of Star Trek fans can identify with. One to hear, it was like, the rules don't mean anything to me. Mm-hmm. not to imply that that's what Star Trek fans say. I just mean that the Soongs want to use their scientific creativity in ways that go beyond the moral and philosophical bounds of the societies they find themselves living in, as well as some of the legal bounds. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're getting themselves in trouble. All of the Soongs do that. All of them, in some way or another, are getting in trouble with their communities because they're doing stuff that their communities don't think is right, whether it's cloning or genetic engineering.
Cloning and boning.
Or making clever robots that are a little creepy and weird everyone out and stress people out like Lore did.
Stress people out.
Yeah.
Lore was stressful.
He was stressful. But once we see how things worked in Adam Soong's world through Korra's eyes, that's when it sort of retroactively you realize, this dude was willing to run down Rene Picard and does run down Jean-Luc Picard to protect a clone that it seems like what we're led to believe now is that he's just genetically engineering these clones. We don't know if there's a mother-father situation, if they're genetically engineered from scratch. We don't know exactly what he's doing, but it's not that he shouldn't care for somebody because they're a clone. Mm-hmm. I think his caring for his daughter is sincere, but it does put this sinister twist on it that it's a different version of the stressed out loving father doing whatever he has to do in order to do, you know, like the movies about like a father who robs a bank or something or takes hostages in order to get cancer medication for their kid.
If they're doing the clone thing though, is it like, is she growing in real time or is they doing some kind of futuristic cloning where they make her age 15 years in a month or something like that? Because first of all, because like Korra was looking up her dad on the internet right? And she was like, oh my gosh, he's a crazy guy. And you got to think, like, well, you haven't thought to look that up before. With all the time you have alone in your house, you never thought. So it just, it kind of made me wonder, maybe she's actually really young and like she's not as old as she presents.
I found that a bit of a leap as well, to that she would have the internet skills and access to the internet, but hadn't even access, even if she didn't look up her dad, you'd think maybe just it would come across her Google News feed or something.
Maybe
she is using her dad's computer. Maybe she only gets to use it from time to time, and mostly she's watching whatever the future version of Netflix in 2024 is.
It would make
it's
more
called Netflix
2024 in the year 2000. No, it would just make more sense if she was actually like, you know, she was actually like 1 month old, and she has the memories of one of those situations, you know, in the sci-fi where it's
one of
like
those classic situations
where the robot is only alive for a month, but they have the memories of the past 20 years. One of those things that was those classic gags, as you like to call them.
It's like a Blade Runner gag.
Yeah, it's a Blade Runner gag.
You implant those memories so the robots don't go crazy. But she's a clone, apparently, not a robot. But who knows? Maybe she is a robot. I don't know.
Those Blade Runner robots knew karate and they knew crazy.
Okay. I'm not entirely sure how to respond to that.
This one knows
it just makes me uncomfortable.
I'm going to have to noodle that through and think about it for a little bit. All right. So anything else on Alton Sung? I mean, I will say that I think that Brent Spiner is doing a wonderful job here, as he has done. I mean, we already said this last week, but the fact that he can create these characters that are clearly in a particular family lineage, you know, forget about the practicalities of that, but there is that similarity in their intensity and their desire to, you know, push the boundaries and stuff, but yet be very different characters in their other behavior.
For some reason, I kept thinking about, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to explain this well enough for anyone to recall what I'm talking about, but in TNG, there was an episode where Data was representing this village. Not that he was in a village, but all these villages' spirits or memories were in his brain, and he kept changing characters. And he was
that
like
Masks. It might be that seventh season episode Masks.
Maybe, but he starts talking in all these sort of eccentric kind of like voices of all these different characters, and like it's a little over the top. It's enjoyable, but it's also kind of like kind of nutty. I'm not speaking negatively. I'm just saying it's just like really excessive.
The other example of that is Fistful of Data's. Where Brent Spiner is doing a great job. He's having a lot of fun playing tons of different characters in this holographic Western world. But he's also doing quite a series of caricatures.
Yeah, caricatures. That's a good word for it.
It makes sense in that context of that not great episode. It makes it because he's already in an entertainment fictional environment. He's not in some real environment. But in with Alton Sung and with Eric Sung on Enterprise and with Adam Sung here, he's doing a really good job. I mean, he's a great actor. He's no slouch. And it's interesting. Slouch. It's interesting to see him acting with Issa Briones, who plays Soji as well as Korra and Daj. And I'm sure
all sorts of people, at least 20 other people that all look the same.
She's a clone.
She's a clone. An honest to God clone.
This is brief, but this is the first.
I'm a prince.
I'm a prince.
It's a Spaceballs reference. It's a very oblique Spaceball reference.
Barf all of you. Barf all of me. He goes, barf. Barf!
Not in here, buddy. This is a Mercedes.
Barf? What's that short for? Bartholomew. My mom always thought that was like the funniest line when he goes, Bartholomew.
I'm a mog. I'm half man, half dog. I'm my own best friend. It's so stupid. Yeah. What a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
Except for the parts with Dot Matrix.
A lot of people consider that. A lot of people just think it's common knowledge that it's a terrible movie. That's what some people feel. Like they're like, Spaceballs?
I've had that experience as well. And it's
those people need to like go
watch
Spaceballs. Dig a hole and
they need to go take a long walk off a short pier.
Yeah.
Both of you are advocating for people to commit suicide.
Oh man! Well, when you word it like that,
under the criteria that they are not fans, they are not fans of Spaceballs.
When you got to frame it like that, you know.
I think Spaceballs is mostly brilliant.
Yeah, I like Spaceballs. Yeah, now.
Right, yes. when will then be now? You fools, that's their stuntman.
And it's got what's his name? Tuvok. What's his name? I'm forgetting his name.
Tim?
Tim Russ.
Tim Russ.
Tim Russerson.
And he ain't found shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, back to the regularly scheduled Picard commentary. Reality.
This is the first, this season is kind of like the first time it's Picard versus Q. And they really exemplified that in this episode.
As far as we know so far.
But I mean, right. I know. It could just be another test.
I suspect there's a false dilemma here. And yeah, that through communication, okay, they'll figure okay, that out.
But like,
that's my guess.
But Q is... Okay, you could say that Q is always sabotaging Picard's shit, but he's more just like fucking Picard's shit up. Here he's actually trying to, looks like he's trying to sabotage something by like...
It looks that way.
Okay, yes. It all could be a big ruse. I agree. I'm just saying, so far, it sounds more like it's presented more as... Before, it's always been like, oh, that Q. Now it seems like it's more serious.
I'd like them to have Picard have a line. I'm kind of surprised they haven't had it already, but I suppose it could come later. That Picard makes some point about his existing relationship with Q would honestly suggest that Q would in some way, at least from his perspective, think he would be helping Picard. Picard could argue maybe he's not actually helping us or Q is just whatever, but it's a little tricky for me to think that Picard would just automatically think Q is just fucking his shit up, because the last time he saw him, he kind of helped, he learned a useful lesson.
Well, it's
Picard. Right, with all good things. Like, right. Like Picard ended that thing with Q, thinking, having a little bit of a closer connection to Q.
So is this actually going to be, though, the first, is there going to be a first, like maybe instead it's Picard ends up helping Q because we are, do you think it's fake that Q is sick, or do you think Q has actually got some shit wrong with him? Do you think that's like a red, or not red herring, but
It's tricky because they could go so many ways with the existing lore within the framework of the existing lore.
Yeah, so maybe it could be presented that somehow Picard, like Q, is grateful for Picard by the end or something.
One theory that I did hear somebody mention was the idea that maybe Q was training Picard to be able to handle making peace with the Borg at some point or somehow. Like, this theory is a little shaky, but the idea being, and we've discussed this before, where Picard blows up the ship in response to Borg Queen.
No!
That maybe that was the wrong thing to do.
No!
And
so wrong.
And that Q was hoping that Picard would actually have the sense to understand that he's got to give up his prejudice against the Borg and consider the possibility of peace with them or something.
They're not so bad. Right?
And in this theory,
it's just like robot zombies, though.
The theory that was put forward is trying to explain why Q's powers are gone. And it's what it's suggesting is that Q did eventually go on trial and had his powers stripped for a while, as we'll recall from that TNG episode. Yeah. And because Picard wasn't there to help him out, he didn't get his powers back. And so that's why he doesn't have his powers now. Yeah. I think it's a bit of a stretch.
That's kind of
But I recount that particular theory as an example of how many different directions they can go, again, within the existing lore framework. So I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying being along for the ride.
Indubitably.
As the kids say.
Indubitably.
Kids don't say that anymore, do they?
What do they say then?
They said that like 5 years ago.
So what are the kids saying
these days? The fads move much quicker now than they do.
Are you keeping up with them? Are you on TikTok?
Do kids say D's nuts still?
No, they say dope. Don't they say dope?
Really young kids say D's nuts. I think the college kids aren't into the D's nuts.
Yeah, you're right.
But the young kids are all about the D's nuts.
I've heard that.
And the Bofa D's nuts.
I'm all about D's nuts.
Bofa D's nuts. And the DVD's balls.
Do they know about Fromunda cheese?
From under these nuts.
Yeah.
Or under these balls.
Yeah. Or
if you really want to catch them in a bind, you ask them if they like tapes or CDs.
You got Aristophanes.
They don't know what either one is.
Yeah, they won't know him.
Euripides.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Euripides balls off.
Eumenides.
Yeah. Did you notice, this is kind of back at the subject of Girardi. This is based on the image that you actually made for the, Patrick made.
But note to the audience, Dan is pointing at me.
I'm sorry, yeah.
very threatening fashion.
Yeah.
Wagging his finger.
Yeah, I am. When you, Patrick made the image of, Girardi looking over at BQ and Girardi was kind of almost looking, breaking fourth wall. Almost.
What are you talking about?
It was like the cover, the art.
Some of our marketing materials?
Yes, right.
Literally. I thought you were talking about I was evoking some image some comment I made. You mean physically I created an image?
Yes, you create, digitally, physically. But
yes, using Adobe Photoshop.
Yeah. So anyways, and
one of the more popular platforms for manipulating photography.
And they showed it again at
on the digital computer.
They showed it at the beginning where Jurati was kind of, when Jurati was tied to the chair and she almost looks at the camera. She's almost looking at the camera and she's got this kind of look on her face like, what have I gotten myself into? But she's not doing that on purpose. It's just how it comes across. I don't know. Look at that marketing material and look at Jurati at the beginning,
Apple,
you know.
Podcast.
You know, they were able to just, there was only two security guards on that whole thing. Only two, and they took them out. And so
I thought there were, I saw more, wasn't there?
Well, apparently there was only two because
at first there were only two.
Because there was no facial recognition getting them anymore. There was no facial recognition.
Oh, you mean in this, I got you, in the actual security guard room, there were only two.
It was interesting. They had this facial recognition stuff, but they didn't like use it. Really,
the whole entrance scene, it was a little bit tricky. And again,
they tricked it too because it seemed like it was going to be a heist, but really it was just a 10-minute mini heist last week. And then they dropped the whole heist.
Still had the heist aspect here, but it was just the whole, like, you know, downloading the things into it. It seemed just like a little bit extra.
It was almost like
a little extra. We didn't need it.
It was almost like a reverse heist because if you look at, like, let's say Ocean's 11, it's a lot of like character building and you know, dialogue and funny.
What about Ocean's 12?
And funny, yeah, or Ocean's Million or whatever.
But there's Ocean's 13. And Ocean's 8.
Yes, I know. There's numbers. There's Ocean. And there's all sorts of heist movies. And
there's
the heist,
like a thousand lakes and, or whatever.
And the house, this is not the point. The house, the heist.
What is the point?
Now I can't talk.
Ocean's 11 was a remake.
The heist, yes, I know. I know. God damn it, I know. The heist app starts with all this fun sort of like talky, like, hey, I'm super cool. You're cool. Hey, I like you. Hey, we're going to be fun and make funny.
You mean in a normal heist movie?
Yeah.
Or in that Rick and Morty episode that was all about heists.
Then the heist happens at the end. The actual exciting heist happens at the end. This was reverse because the heist kind of happened in the last 10 minutes of the last episode. And then after that is after that. They had all these people talking to each other and doing the before heist thing where they're getting to know each other and having clever, witty banter and being like, Jabba Juba, Jabba Juba, you know, like that.
I got you.
Yeah. And Jurati sings.
I agree. I was hoping, I thought, not hoping maybe, but I did think we'd probably have a little bit more heist going on. And what we did get was just Jurati sticking a USB thing in and then they got in without suspicion. So
yeah, and they took out the two dudes who were watching the facial recognition, and that wasn't, you know, notice Cristobal, he was complimenting the 21st century. Usually people from the future in shows, in all of shows and movies, are always like, how is this time period not blown up yet?
But it was a weird compliment because he was like, it's so dirty and loud and rough, but he liked the real cigars.
Yeah.
I guess they were playing up the whole, he's being happy about, I don't know, hanging out with this doctor lady, but...
It's kind of bummer to think that food's going to suck in the future, but I guess you just kind of get used to it.
Yeah, it's just grass is always greener on the other side of the century.
Yeah, you probably get sick of it after a while.
All right, well, how about this? Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, let's talk about the goal of the heist. What was the goal of the heist?
The heist goal.
The heist goal. And the preview of that goal was that it was...
Goal heist!
It was so Picard could give a really kick-ass motivational speech.
Who am I? Goal heist! Goal heist!
Are you Golem?
Yeah, except I'm saying goal heist.
Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Sorry.
What a weirdo.
I gave myself the giggles.
You gave myself the giggles.
I do that
I gave sometimes. Myself the giggles. I give myself the giggles more than I give the audience the giggles. I gotta reverse that trend. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Dan gives me the giggles.
Okay. Aww. So, the heist. The interesting thing here, of course, is the heist, instead of seeking gold or jewels, there have been other Star Trek heists, but they've been seeking an isolinear chip or an isolinear rod or some sort
isolinium.
Of...
Isolinium.
Other, yeah, or isolinium.
That's straight up fucking isolinium.
That didn't appear until Discovery. I think that was the first time isolinium itself appeared.
I think it's made up.
But in this case, the whole point of this is ostensibly it's to monitor Rene Picard and make sure she goes the right direction. Obviously, that wasn't going to happen because of the continued manipulations of Mr. Q.
Oh, man, that guy.
And so Picard has to interact with her over the objections, the initial objections of Talon. But
big ears.
Ultimately, what the purpose of this was is so that Picard could give this super awesome pep talk to Renee. And for me, for my money, I don't know what y'all think, but for me,
what all y'all think,
I thought Picard's little speech here to Renee, it this whole interaction, good. I thought this was like instant Star Trek classic thing.
There's two
classic
lines.
Classic Picard.
There's two lines in particular that I thought was really nice to just think about after you said it. One was like, sometimes those who shine the brightest feel the sting of fear and melancholy in ways others can never understand. Yeah. And then there's the other one. He says, fear is fear. Yep. It doesn't speak in riddles.
Yeah. I love that. That's the one I wrote down too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I took your shit.
No, you didn't.
I'm sorry.
This was synergistic.
We all had the
synergistic.
Same
synergistic.
We had the same shit.
You're allowed to say that again. I know for a while in the early 2000s, it wasn't cool to say synergistic anymore.
Because it sounded like corporate jargon. I knew some people that thought it only applied to corporations. Yeah. I'm like, no, that's a legit word.
We've now cycled back to reclaiming that word.
Which I'm claiming. I am happy about because I think it's a good word.
And it sounds fun. It's fun to say.
Good word.
Good word. Oh, good word.
Oh, word.
Jesse, good word.
Word?
Good word,
but
Jesse.
Yes, this was a wonderful interaction between Picard and Renee. There was a lot of stuff to go on in here. First of all, as Dan, as you already mentioned, that first quote was him having a connection with her, and a connection that he doesn't even have with a lot of people in Starfleet, other people who have done crazy intense stuff, but not necessarily at the level he has, or at least as he perceives it. So that was cool. And a great way for him to make that connection with Renee Picard. I liked when she asked him what he was afraid of.
Yeah.
And he was like, he laughed and he was like, I mean, it would take too long to, you know. So he's happy to admit that to her, that she has fears.
And I was kind of imagining him thinking about him as if like trying to pretend he was a security guard. Like, because from her perspective, he was a security guard. So I was trying to picture that. And it was kind of like, I can see that, but it's like, it makes him seem a lot more intimidating in a different way or something, you know? Because like both ways, he's awesome, but
he's still a security guard, even though he's like this old dude. He's all bald. And it's like, what is this guy like really badass or something?
Yeah, exactly. And he knows how to get some shit done.
And he's laying down some wisdom and providing some psychological assistance. Right. And you're like, I don't know, this guy's pretty nuts.
He talks like Patrick Stewart.
I want some of those aero spike engines.
Well,
sound pretty cool.
That shuttle, I forget the designation of the shuttle. You may have written it down, Dan.
No, I
but
wish
that
I did.
Shuttle, we've seen that before in the Enterprise intro. In the intro to Star Trek Enterprise.
OV-165 shuttle.
That's one of in that intro segment, they are showing the evolution of spacecraft, starting with airplanes and going into space shuttles and things. And that shuttle is one of the ones they show as an early spacecraft.
So no this shit.
That was a cool little callback.
That was an Easter egg, you might. Would that be considered an Easter egg?
I believe so.
Because it played, it was a
that
little.
That is an Easter egg.
Usually Easter eggs are more less involved in the plot, you know, but
yeah, but they had other Easter eggs too that were less involved. Like, for example, the Nomad, the which is from the the name. The TOS episode is driving me nuts. Taste of Armageddon. I can't remember now. But the Nomad, which was an early from the perspective of TOS 1967 or whatever, the Nomad was an early satellite that was launched, but then it bumped into some other like alien satellite and they merged. And it was kind of like a proto version of what happens with V'ger in Star Trek, the motion picture. And they had a picture of like the schematics of Nomad, either pre-launch or maybe it had recently been launched. I don't remember exactly. But there was, you'd see it on one of the signs in the background. Cause they had a bunch of stuff on the decorations in the background.
What was it? Then he had a flashback and he was
the other really important
the changeling.
Thing. About
this.
And he was going
the
like
changeling. That's right.
He was going like, Maman. And then he saw these.
That means
this,
Momar.
No, you're thinking of Gumar.
Momar.
And there was that weird monster. There was this weird monster alien that looked like a Reman from Star Trek Nemesis or something.
It wasn't quite as extreme as that.
No.
I saw some like screen grabs that people
what's
took.
What's going on with that?
Yeah.
I'm really curious about that because.
What happened to his mom?
Clearly, some Picard, he has intense guilt.
Because there was that dragging scene again, too.
Yeah. He has intense guilt related to his mother. We have posited early on in the season that this is sort of. blending in some of Patrick Stewart's real life experiences and things that he's discussed about having a guilt about not being in a position to protect his mother against his abusive father. And we know from previous Star Trek lore that Picard's father was a piece of shit. And we see what appears to be Picard's father in this episode, in that flashback. But then we also see that weird monster creature.
Right.
And so I'm really curious, what is a dream manifestation? What is an actual memory? Mm-hmm. Is it all memory? If it is, that's really intense and fucked up. I kind of think it's more like a blending of stuff that actually happened and some sort of metaphorical psychological response, but still centered around, because the
it'd be pretty fucked up if that was for real.
Well, yeah, and there was all that emotion on Picard's face when she said your mother was lucky to have you as a son, and he kind of winced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
Like, he was like, no, she wasn't, because I wasn't. I think the implication strongly there is that he was not able to protect her when she needed him.
Yeah, that was a pretty strong wince he gave.
And that would be a great foundation for him being reluctant to develop deep relationships beyond the types of relationships he's cultivated with close members of the crew, people who have saved his life, that sort of thing. But that closer relationship, the kind of thing that Laris was talking about, that Guinan was talking about.
So Talon, they did bring up the fact that it's the same actor playing Talon as it is Laris. Of course, the ears are different. Now,
big ears.
He comments about saying it couldn't be you because she was a Romulan. Now, she does not respond to that.
You suggested last week, and I don't know if you... Last week you suggested they were just low on actors, so that's why they did.
No, actually, I was going to comment on that was a joke. Okay. I was saying that in a joke. I think I even put on a jokey voice.
I think you.
Like, hold on, they were just talking. They didn't have enough actors.
I might have not caught.
Everybody was on strike.
I think the more important is the wine.
I tell you, the wine. I'm Willie the wine, and I'm more important than you.
Came out of the wine.
You got the news tools.
Got to go back pretty far in our catalog, I think, to get to the worm voice.
The worm voice.
Any context for that.
It's the worm voice.
Excuse me.
I think the more important thing... standing in the doorway.
I'm going to talk now in my worm voice.
I think the more important thing from last week was that her pad, or equivalent, whatever her device...
You meant like a place she lived, like her pad.
Yeah, her flat.
Her flat. That's what they would have called it. They call them flats because there's only one floor.
Sure. It appeared to have Romulan lettering on it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say for certain. Some other people on the internet have suggested similar things. I'm just not familiar enough with Romulan lettering, but it looked Romulan-ish to me. And then in this episode, there is a claim out there that I cannot corroborate, but there's a claim out there floating around on the internet that at one point she curses in Romulan. Mm. Now, in this episode,
something about Talon, it was in the captioning.
Something like that. So,
like curses, so, Romulan cursing intensifies.
Do you watch it with captions?
On the second viewing, I always watch it with captions. On the first one, I don't.
I never watch it with captions, but I'm a iconoclast.
I'm saying on the first one, I do it without captions. I try to enjoy it without captions.
I am
but
in no way critiquing your method.
I'm just saying.
I think your method is
arguably
much better than mine.
But you were saying you're
because
not.
Because you get additional information.
But you're like, I'm an iconoclast, as if you meant you're fancy or something.
It was intended.
You can't say one thing and then mean another.
It was intended to be mockingly self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. It perhaps didn't come across that way.
But it's still based in my heart. It's based
because
in
I do think I'm an iconoclast.
But it's based in the implication that somehow not using, you were implying that somehow captions.
I was implying that by doing the less rational thing, mm-hmm. I'm awesome.
Okay.
Now, clearly that's ridiculous.
I don't like to read stuff.
But I do think it is a reason a lot of people might say that. I'm going against society's rules. I'm going against my own good sense.
Well, then that would mean...
That means I'm exercising freedom at a higher level than the rest of you, sheep.
If that were the case, you would watch shows with captioning on all the time, because people normally don't do that. I only do it for the second viewing to help me, like, gather extra info.
Precisely. You are doing the sensible, logical thing.
He does it the first time, but not the second. Now, that's fucked up.
See, that would be kind of weird and fucked up. Yeah. I would agree with you there. I'd be uncomfortable.
So we're talking about Talon. You said someone maybe spoke in Romulan. We don't know if it's because of closed captioning. Yeah. And closed captioning. I don't know.
There's not a lot to guess yet.
Yeah, on no. Where this but is going. But Picard was being like really concerned. There were two things he said to Talon that where he was concerned when she was like talking about how she was ghost. She was a ghost. She's like, I don't talk to people. I can't. Mm-hmm. I observe Rene Picard, and I don't talk to anyone. She's like, the best way to keep her safe is by watching over her. And then Picard's like, well, who is watching over you? You know,
as someone on the internet pointed out, he's basically saying, who watches the watchers?
Yeah, she is
called a watcher.
Right. It's true. But he also said that with
who's watching over you?
Who's watching? Who's watching over you? And but it showed that
why whoever young lady is watching over you.
But he's
cheers, big ears.
He was showing concern for her, and then that was sort of you know, thingied by it was
thingied. You've lost the word.
Solidified. I don't know. I guess the proof was more, not evidence was
in,
more
in the pudding. The proof is in the pudding.
He said another line where she's like, what if Q's right? What if she's
the
not
secrets in the sauce?
What if she's
green,
Talon goes,
green tomatoes.
What Talon goes, what if Q is right? What if she's not ready? Referring to Renee. Mm-hmm. And then Picard's like, perhaps it's you who's not ready. This is her destiny.
They named the dog Indiana.
Yeah. You've done a good job.
That sounds more like a Sean Connery.
You've done well, a good.
For, yes, exactly.
That's you've like, done a good job. So
yes, we've thoroughly documented the fact that none of us can do a remotely passing impersonation of Patrick Stewart, who has a not particularly unusual English accent.
But anyways, I think
he's from more up north or something.
So right? Picard was based. So he said first, he's like, who's watching over you, showing concern? And then he says he's maybe it's you're not ready because you don't want to let go of her. He's worried that she's lonely, you know, and that she's doing this all on her own and that she needs help. Mm. And so, yes, there is the who's watching the watchers. That definitely is a parallel there. But it's just showing like he's replaced, turning the tables on her. And she's kind of like writing him off, kind of like, oh, what are you talking about? You know, it happened twice. And I don't know if it's going to mean like this is his way of reaching out to Laris somehow through Talon or something. I don't know.
Well, now we're going to see her wandering around in his brain juice.
Right.
Which if she is connected to Laris, then that'll create all sorts of fun, crazy mind joint business.
They're using this
inside out.
Once again, very, very little techno jargon, but techno babble rather.
Techno babble.
But gadgetry. There's some
gadgetry. Exactly. So they're using a neuro-optic interceptor. That's their like inception machine they're going to use next episode. They've been doing.
Are you talking about, is that the little stick thing that looks like the same thing that Gary Seven has in Assignment Earth?
No. Well, that was to show Picard's brain. Anyway,
yes, yeah.
No, the neuro-optic interceptor, maybe it's part of the same device, but this is what's going to allow them to go inside their brains and like have an adventure in
their
brain.
What was the thing that Girardi had that knocked out those dudes?
That was just a little bucket of gas.
A little gas bucket?
Blasted. It was like a little vape pen, except instead of vaping nicotine, it vaped.
I imagine...
Sleepy gas. That didn't affect them for some reason.
I noticed in this episode and in the last episode, and I don't know if this is more common. This is probably common. It's just a really... jumped out at me for whatever reason this episode and last episode, where they kind of, instead of doing a preview for the next episode during the credits, where they like, next week on Stoop Bloopers, you know, and they go, but I don't want to go.
It's called Picard.
You must go. Don't make me say that to him. You know, that kind of shit. Like they use the last 5 minutes of the episode to kind of preview the next week. Like with the heist in last week, they previewed that like, Borg Queen, AKA
BQ.
Yes, the BQ.
Which was catching on, by the way.
Yeah.
We tweeted
on with actual real Star Trek.
We tweeted the term BQ and a bunch now, of people caught on to that.
Right.
It was a sensation.
I want to keep saying BQ, but I'm worried that people are going to get sick of it and think they're going
to
say stop
it's
saying
the thing
that.
To say,
now because
though.
You get hundreds of retweets, now people are going to be sick of it?
No, I guess it's just beginning.
This is
only the beginning. So.
I want them to start calling when she's in her Borg makeup. I want them to call her, like, hey, BQ. I want it to happen
in
real life.
You want it to happen on screen.
Like in real life.
You mean BK. In real life with the actors?
With the actors.
Oh. I thought it would be more funny if it happened on screen.
No, that would be funny if it happened on.
Yo,
that'd be even
BQ,
better.
Get us to the future.
BQ.
Yo, think about the future.
They pick up a new character along the way to take back to the future.
Yeah. So anyways, so last
the guy with the Wyrm voice.
So they set up the whole
back
like
to the future.
Next week on Star Trek Picard, they're gonna have this whole thing with
we've got to get you
with
back
BQ
to the
and Jurati. And they did it again this week by saying like next week on Star Trek, they're gonna have Inception. You know, like that's what they did this week in the last 5 minutes. I'm sure it's a very common tactic they use. It just jumped out at me for some reason.
I agree.
It's kind of like say it's not like the.
I hear what you're saying.
So the first episode, well, this episode two when they escaped from the bad place and like, and Elnor got shot, that was more of a cliffhanger. Yeah. That was a cliffhanger. Yeah. That wasn't a setup for next week. That was a cliffhanger. That's like, what the fuck's gonna happen?
Yes,
but,
you're right.
But this was more of a setup for like. It's just less of a cliffhanger and more like, this is what they're going to do next episode, you know? So poopy doops, you know?
Precipice.
Persephone?
All right. Any other major points or shall we shift along to odds and ends? Because I've got a couple of odds and ends to talk about.
Some
of them might be rather hefty odds and ends. I think they just don't quite rise to the level of chief conversation bits.
Are we going to take a break?
No, we've already done all our breaks.
Before we go on, I just wanted to, do we know who actually sang Jurati's part? Is that couldn't have been Alice. Well, I mean, maybe it was Alice.
I think it was Alice.
You think it was Alice?
I think it was Alice. Didn't she sing? Yeah, she's. I think she didn't she sing in Trover versus the Universe?
Trover.
You know what I'm talking about.
She was a drummer.
Stephen Strange dances to the universe.
She was a drummer. That was the first time I ever saw her in a movie was Mr. Flax goes to the world police or whatever.
That sounded like her, though.
We're getting further away from the actual. Yeah. His name like it was Tom Thumb versus the world.
It sounded like a Canadian was singing a song.
Is she Canadian?
I believe so, yes.
That's cool. She was in the movie Goon with Sean Astin.
Goon?
Who's Sean that William Scott.
Sean William Scott, yeah.
All right.
So I guess no, I don't
is
have.
Is that Stifler?
No, so a lot. I know a lot of actors have good voices, but I didn't know she really she's got some style.
Some people do, man.
Yeah.
I did think this, but I think a lot of other people thought this too because it was fucking obvious.
The day before Thanksgiving, in my opinion, is the biggest. Biggest travel day of the year.
But the point is quite valid in this case, the reference, because numerous people noticed that the framing of Picard when he's down, you know, they're sort of doing this flashback structure, which was fun, where we open the episode with Picard dying and we're like, oh no, what's happening? But that framing of him is almost identical to Tapestry, to the TNG episode Tapestry, when he's having his heart surgery situation and the camera is kind of like above him and he's passed out and then it's going into his brain.
I worked out the times they gave on screen versus how much was actually left in the episode, taking into account intros and credits and all that. Actually, you don't have to take into account the intro, you just have to take into a credit. Anyways, when they said 34 minutes left, there were actually about 35 minutes left in the episode. When they said 20 minutes.
That must have been the beginning of the episode.
That was the beginning when they said 34 minutes earlier. The next, right. You got it. Good. You're following along with what that's good.
I got it.
You got it. But check it out, though. It gets fucked up.
Yo.
Well, when they say 26 minutes earlier, there was actually 29 minutes and 52 seconds left. And then when they said 14 minutes earlier, there was 19 minutes and 21 seconds left in the episode.
Dude.
So. But I mean, I guess it makes sense because the episode. You know what I should have gotten? I should have gotten the moment when Picard got hit by the car. That's when I should have. That's what I should have.
Should have, would have, could have.
Next week, I'm going to give those timestamps of when he got hit, not the end of the episode, but when he got hit with the car. Because then it would have been.
Does that make sense?
Because when
is it possible to suss that out from the structure of the episode?
I don't know yet, but I that's a good question. I assume it would, but maybe it won't. And so, but maybe it'll say 30 minutes earlier, but it was actually 29 minutes left until Picard got hit. I don't know. I just don't know. This requires further study.
Another thing I noticed was this episode had an unusually high amount of ADR, you know, the sort of post facto recording.
Yeah.
And I don't mean recording over dialogue because of car sounds or whatever, that part of ADR. That's fine. And it's not unusual to see these little added bits. Well, I'm like, talking specifically about clearly they've added dialogue to explain something that they thought hadn't been explained. And it's all super awkward because you don't see anyone's faces.
Yeah. And you don't see their, you feel like you should see their jaw.
Their lips aren't moving.
Yeah. Some, like, even if it's a backward shot of the back of their head, it still looks like they're not talking.
I think there were three things that really stood out at me for that. First was when Rene Picard and Jean-Luc are walking out in, you know, right before they get hit by the car. So they're walking outside of the building and into the sort of driveway area. We can't see their mouths or anything, but Rene, it just says in the and the audio quality is all a different type of quality than when they keep talking.
That's actually hard to do when recording studio and music, is to keep the same audio quality.
But she says going around the outside gets us there the quickest. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was like, why did they have to add that? And I guess they were just like, I guess we want to explain why they went out the side entrance. To me, it seemed ludicrous. I was like, why is this obvious ADR being added here? In the clinic, there's one part where they're in the clinic when Picard is getting worked on, etc., where you just hear somebody off screen saying, "We did succeed in getting Renee into quarantine," like just a reminder, like because all of a sudden, like Renee is there watching Captain Picard or Admiral Picard all dying on the floor, and the next scene is them in the clinic without Renee Picard. So I guess they thought, in that case, at least there was a justification there saying, I guess they felt they needed to add it. It just was super awkward how it was sort of squished in there.
Maybe with the first thing they gave her more lines so they could hear her like weird accent.
Maybe, but the
talking
other
about like, are you talking about Teresa?
Her like weird.
Oh no, you're
British effects, British French accent.
Well, and then there was another part where I forget who said it, but somebody said exactly the doctor doesn't know why he's still out, which was another thing that was clearly laid over top of whatever was filmed. And this episode, just like the last episode, was directed by Jonathan Frakes. I love Jonathan Frakes as a director. I thought last episode was directed in amazing fashion. I think key moments in this episode, very well directed. I don't know if it was the directing or the editing or what, or the fact that this was a super short episode and that they had all this extra ADR squished in there. 7 of 9 had almost no lines.
Yeah.
She had one brief line.
She was hardly in it.
She was always saw of her, which was being out of character for 7 of 9.
You didn't even see her.
She was totally out of character because she was, we talked about how
she was like having fun at a party.
Yeah, we talked about how she's been more relaxed on Earth, but she was just like a normal person.
Because she doesn't have her Borg implants, and Raffi even references that. Not having the baggage of the Borg implants.
But
Raffi's always got baggage.
Such an opposite perspective of her on Voyager. Like, she's the opposite person here as she is in Voyager. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying it's interesting. She seems like almost a different character. Like you said, there's a reason for it. So,
but it was just kind of funny.
Did you say there was a third one?
Well, that was the third one. The doctor doesn't know.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It feels to me like there was some other. I don't know if there was another storyline or what. It just the short running time.
Yeah.
And some of these kind of clunky jumping around between scenes things, and then adding in this ADR, it almost makes me feel like we're missing a few scenes in here. That had to be edited out for one reason or another.
Edited out.
I don't know any way to find that out with any certainty, but it's got that vibe to it.
Well, speaking of Rene Picard, I mean, and I don't know if there was more to this, but Picard, they briefly mentioned her drinking when Picard was like, and he sounded like he really cared. He's like, does she normally drink like that? He sounded all like, but they never really went anywhere with that. I mean, it was there to show that she was stressed out, but I don't know. I guess
implication was that he was asking if this is normal. Talon was like, no. Yeah. She implied that, no, it's not normal. She must just be...
Picards don't drink like that.
Yeah. And relatedly, they did show Raffi staring at a bottle of bourbon.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, well, you want something to drink?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, club soda.
You think she'd rather have some snake leaf?
Yeah. Well, she wants snake leaf with some bourbon. Which is the ideal combination.
That's where it goes. Yeah. That's how it goes, man.
Oh, when Picard... Was it Picard who gave his arm to Rene? He was bringing her back in the room and he gave her his arm. I read in an old book from like the 30s or 40s or 50s or I don't know,
the book was from that era?
Yeah.
About Star Trek?
No, it was one of those books about how people should behave, and it says that a man shouldn't offer his arm to a woman because it makes her look cheap. That's what this 40s book said.
Yeah, is that like that 1950s home ec book that tells little girls that they should have They should make two of, like, whatever their husband's favorite cocktail is, they should make two and put one in the freezer and then wait at the door with the other one and hand it to him silently without greeting him or anything. Just hand him his drink as he enters the door. Take his jacket and hat and hand him his martini.
Oh, that was like the 50s or something.
And then he'll slurp that down. Slurp. And then he'll go to the freezer and get the chilled one and hand
it to
him.
It's just like, imagine the video is, it's crazy.
Well, why can't she put both in the freezer and then take one out right before he comes home?
Well, I think the implication was is that she would know precisely when he would come home.
It's hilarious and tragic and awful that
she's expected to know.
That these expectations of women, these videos were made by a bunch of men basically telling women how they should treat
hey
them.
Boys, we've been tasked with making a home economics video. Yeah.
Right.
What should we put in it?
It's just like,
it wasn't like it was a bunch of like old ladies that were like, this is what works the best.
Yeah,
like,
no, right. Exactly. It was just,
it was like there was some dudes that were like, this is what you should do.
This is what I want.
And this is what, like, yes.
Oh man.
Give me another. Bring it from the freezer.
Speaking now of the clinic, you were mentioning the clinic. She uses the defibrillator and she goes clear. I was always wondering why doctors do that clear thing when they're like clear. I always thought
people aren't touching the body and get electrocuted.
That's what I thought, but she had no reason to say it in that scenario.
I think you're just supposed to say it regardless.
That's one of those things like fire in the hole or like, you know, don't point guns at people. Like even
well, okay, all right. It may be like fire in the hole. Don't point guns at people is just proper gun safety. That's not like an aphorism.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't even point like Nintendo zappers at people.
Don't ever point.
No, that's what you're supposed to do.
You don't point a weapon at anything you don't intend to kill.
Right. That's why you shouldn't point zapper guns at people.
Yeah. Okay, but
it's not going to work.
But you don't kill anybody.
But that's,
it's just fun to shoot people.
But it's the principle. Did you know the idea? You have to get it ingrained
like,
in
but
your.
But you're just sitting there.
No, you
like,
have to
I
get it.
Shoot
you. You got to have it ingrained in your psyche, so it's a reflex. Nope, can't point gun. I don't even care if it's a fake gun. Only if it's a squirt gun filled with pee are you allowed to do it.
Did you know that the second player
on
Duck Hunt could control the duck?
I did know that.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy, huh?
Well, not a lot of people.
I didn't know that.
This player too.
I always heard that those defibrillators, they always use them.
Control the dog.
They use them wrong in movies when people try to bring other people back to life.
They often use them when somebody's heart has stopped. They don't. They don't help if the heart is stopped.
They're supposed to do it if it's the heart's all irregular.
Yeah,
right?
All it's meant to do is reset the electrical patterns
Picard's
of the heart.
Picard's Jenks almost blew out the defibrillator.
Yeah.
That was kind of tight.
Yeah.
And then Rios tried to blame her son.
Yeah, that was funny because I wouldn't have even noticed if she hadn't said anything.
I noticed immediately. I was like, oh, that's kind of fucked up to blame her son.
Yeah, it is a fucked up move. She called him out on that shit. But I would have missed it. But I'm a little dense, you know.
Another little Easter egg. And there are so many Easter eggs in this, on all these episodes. There's just a lot. But another one that jumped out at me
like
was
the Easter Bunny was there.
When Picard, when he was putting his arm out, speaking of that, Dan, when he's putting his arm out to Renee, he was saying, Dr. Jemison's going to make a toast and they want you to be there. And that's a reference to Mae Jemison, who's an actual U.S. astronaut who was also in an episode of TNG.
Mm.
And in 2024, she would be a renowned person who's had a long career, you know, in the astronaut corps and sciences and all that other stuff. So I thought that was a fun little double. Yeah. It was both referencing a real astronaut and somebody who'd been on TNG.
Wasn't the guy's name, was it pronounced Musa? I guess he was kind of like a side character, the sort of incidental kind of character.
The boss of the program?
Yeah, he sounded like Bashir, I thought. His accent sounded like Bashir. And he goes like, I'm not going to try to imitate the voice because I can't do it and I'll sound silly. But he goes, Picard, get in here.
Yes.
And he goes, that's an order. And
for new listeners, Dan has a particular bugaboo when it comes to you, the cliched use of the term "that's an order."
Right.
Oh,
don't fall off that cliff. That's an order. Don't get yourself killed. That's an order.
I had a feeling you might.
Don't fall in love. That's an order. So whenever. That's an order comes up.
Natalie
Dan
was like,
is
Dan's
bound-
going to say something about
that. Did she?
Dan
right.
will
she
comment
knows.
On that. I didn't think about that.
Well, that's funny. Natalie's totally right. But it's okay. It was an okay usage because they were being all meta about it. They weren't actually saying it.
He was being playful.
He was being playful. So that was okay. That was an okay
it
use
was,
of it.
He was like, I'm your boss, but we're having a good time.
Yeah, so I thought that was very appropriate, very tastefully done.
But you better get over
it. Yeah, you're starting to get on the... It is straddling the line, which is like, how playful and whimsical can a superior be?
I was totally faked out, too, because I kept thinking he was talking to Jean-Luc, and I was like, who's talking to Jean-Luc? And they did that on... They did that on purpose. They got me.
We got you.
Yep.
Big Star Trek.
All right. Any other old odds and ends?
Conclusions? Amygdala. His amygdala was fucked up.
Very short episode. Mostly
the shortest episode ever.
Mostly high quality and entertaining with a few absurd, absurd
but
leaps
it was
of
good.
Logic
Overall,
in there.
Overall, it was cool.
And I do like the Jurati Borg Queen. Banter and all that. I'm enjoying that. I'm really curious to see where
they're
that
like
goes.
They're like a total odd couple, and it's funny. Like I to repeat again, how the Borg Queen's all imitates sort of the Borg Queen seems more freewheeling now. Before she seemed more evil, and now she's still sinister, but she's more like, hey, I'm a Joker, you know. And she seems like she's got Jurati.
Do you think she's a toker?
I think she was into the fact that Jurati was.
Is she a midnight smoker?
Midnight bloker? Jurati's a what?
Well, Jurati was drinking, and she was, and I think. The Borg Queen was into that.
Yeah, well, I like how...
The BQ.
The BQ. I like how BQ is...
Not the BK.
Not the DQ, not the BK. Not the Dairy King or the Burger Queen. But anyways, the point being is, like, I like how the character sort of changes... How the character's been changed. We already talked about that.
And there's the threads of the mystery of where the season's going continue. More evidence in some ways that Jurati and the Borg Queen will fuse, and that future Borg Queen we saw in the first episode, that alternate version of the Borg Queen, more evidence that that's going to be Jurati.
That would be fucked up. That'd freak me out.
What we still don't know yet is what are Q's precise motivations. We don't know whether or not we do want Renee Picard to be successful or not in her mission. We have posited the idea that the big twist is going to turn out to be that the Star Trek future that we are familiar with is in fact the alternate reality.
Yeah.
And so the argument is it's okay to change the timeline in order to get to that alternate reality as opposed to the fascist nightmare of the Confederation.
Mm-hmm.
Or the present day.
So, I'm glad to see Issa Briones?
Yeah.
Issa Briones?
That is her name.
Yeah, I'm glad to see. I don't know if it's Issa or Issa, but anyways.
Issa.
Issa, we still gonna die?
No.
Issa gonna be here? I like that she's been made, like, this is like old news, but it's nice to see that she made it into the season.
We weren't sure if she was gonna have a part.
If she was gonna pull a Klingon from Klingons from Discovery and just like, you know, be like, where are the Klingons? Where's Dodge? You know,
I agree. Although I still feel bad that we don't get so much Eleanor. We get the hallucinations.
Yeah, right.
We get the brief. Hallucinating in previous episode where Rafi briefly sees Elnor, and I keep missing it on my first. I keep missing it first. I'm like, wait, okay, clearly she just saw Elnor, but I looked away for a second, so I didn't see it, and then I have to rewind.
Clever girl,
rewind. Clever girl.
Yeah, but they at least introduced Elnor.
Yeah,
but just all right. To tease us with him.
All right,
smell no.
All right, I think
smell
that'll
nor.
Do it for
smell
us.
Nor butts
this week. I so think
that does it. Yes.
So good people of the internet. What's your next task? Rate and review. Smash that subscribe button.
Smash it.
Smash it.
Smash it good.
No, you don't have to do any of that stuff if you don't want to, but you can.
We're not going
to
make it.
We don't want you to do it.
Interact with us on social media at It's Got Star Trek. On Twitter.
On Twitter.
At It's Got Star Trek on Instagram. We're on Facebook. Mm. We are on YouTube. That's about it. We also have a website.
We should be on
www.itsgotstartrek.com.
We should be on OnlyFans too.
We're going to start up at Dan is going to represent us on the OnlyFans account. So that's something we're working on. Keep a lookout for our OnlyFans account. No TikTok yet, but you can email us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. And I think
we should have a Pinterest.
No, no, Pinterest. That I refuse to get involved with the only fans I will seriously consider. Pinterest, no thank you.
What about Instagram?
Pinterest fucks up my Google search results, and I don't like it.
Yeah, yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I don't like that.
I don't like when I'm looking for an image and it leads me to a Pinterest page and I can't save the image.
And you can't even find the image because it just shows you this whole fucking page of pictures and you have to root through and scroll through. Come on, I'm just trying to find it. I just want to look at a fucking shelf.
Just a shelf.
Pinterest. A clever shelf.
That's all. Isn't that all anyone wants to do is just look at a clever shelf?
Yeah, or sometimes a coffee table or
what if there's an elf
upon wreath,
it?
A new wreath, a new style of wreath for the holidays.
Yeah,
when you've gotten like Easter bored wreath. Of your old, wreath. You've gotten bored of your old bog standard wreath.
Bog standard.
Or Easter decoration. I guess I could be more. What about, I guess I could be more current with my holidays.
What about Instagram?
Yes, we're on, no, we're
what
on
about
Instagram.
It?
We do have Instagram, don't we?
I mention it every fucking week.
I can't believe I forgot.
I think we
this.
Already said it.
No, I knew. Now that I remember it. I don't know why momentarily I forgot that we didn't.
No
have,
worries. It's all good.
I think somebody had said Instagram just a minute ago.
What about Google Plus? Are we on Google Plus?
I don't know if that exists.
Google Plus went away before we could create a page.
Piss me off that they would link your. If you made a comment public on Google Plus, it would appear on the YouTube page you were commenting about. So if you shared a YouTube link on Google Plus and you wrote a comment in public, it would appear in the YouTube thread. So I did that once and a bunch of people called me a fucking idiot for some reason. And I was like,
because YouTube comments are the worst places on the planet.
Yes, exactly. I didn't know that. Right. YouTube comments are the worst. And so I did not know that I was posting to YouTube.
Most of our YouTube comments are either somebody agreeing with some point we made, or more often than not, people calling us woke assholes. we're woke assholes.
We're woke.
Because nobody ever says woke assholes.
You know, these people do.
Assholes do.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that'll do it for us this week. And next week, we don't know the episode name, but it's going to be episode 7 of Star Trek Picard.
It'll be great.
Oh, last week, Patrick, not Picard. Patrick knew last week the name of the next week's episode, and that made him really happy.
Because they released
a few
episodes ahead
of time. This
time
he's really frustrated again.
The last three episode titles they released well ahead of time, which
is nice.
And
now you're all exasperated again.
I just find it slightly obnoxious because don't worry about it. I'm talking to myself. I shouldn't worry about it, but I find it silly and it makes the marketing complicated, but that's a whole nother thing. People don't care. We will talk to you around this time. Next week. Have a good one.
I've got an intercept program. I'm going to see who she's texting.
She does seem to check her mobile device quite a bit.
Oh, we all do that.